News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 807. On a Tuesday, blue skies and Quinn Hillier, they go together, don't they?
They do this morning. Quinn Hillier joins us. You can find his work at quinnhillier.com. Also writes for NOLA.com and The Advocate. Hey, good morning, Quinn. How are you?
I'm okay, thanks, guys. Hope you all are, too.
Oh, yeah, we're doing great.
Yeah, so just a month and less than a week out until those primaries coming up on May 19th. And you could tell. You listen to the radio, you watch TV, the ads are running. And we talked some about one of these local races that was, at least for me, kind of got fiery. It was unexpected for me that we would see Rusty Glover and Doug Harwell kind of going after one another in that race for State Senate District 34. And Quinn, I know you've brought it up, but I've heard from a lot of people who aren't happy about the ad that Harwell's been running.
Yeah, look, it's a negative ad, and it's technically true if you look at it through squinty eyes, but it is out of context. And just to review it again, he says that Rusty Glover accepted a big massive pay or voted for a big massive pay raise, etc. 2 points. Number one, the pay had been frozen for years, so had not kept up with inflation. So he did a two-step process. He voted for a raise that would have now brought it back up, inflation adjusted, to the same level that it would have been if it had been rising by inflation. And then he voted to cut it back to half of the increase. So in other words, he raised his pay, then he cut his pay back, or everybody's pay in the state legislature, along with putting it on the ballot for the public to approve a new system where automatic inflation adjustments would be made, so you wouldn't have no raise, no raise, no raise, and then all of a sudden, after 20 years, trying to make up for 20 years of not being raised. So he voted to put something on the ballot that the public approved. So that's the full context. Mm-hmm. It's completely different from, oh, he's got his hands in the till, okay? You know, you can say maybe he shouldn't have done that, but you don't make it sound like he did something that was crooked or dishonest or something like that. Second thing he said, and he let a tax increase go into effect. What that was a local tax in Baldwin County. Forgot what it was, to support schools or something or whatever. And every member of the Baldwin County delegation wanted it. They had to go to the state legislature to let the people of Baldwin choose it, and it passed the state Senate unanimously. Hmm. So this is something that Baldwin wanted for itself, and he doesn't represent Baldwin. He says, you want it, you get it, just like every other member of the state Senate.
Yeah.
So there's the context.
Yeah, thanks for laying that out again. We'll work to get both men on this show before that primary election.
It's funny, Dalton. You know, the reason that negative ads are run at all, it's really got to do, I think, kind of like with more like more deep-rooted psychology. First of all, they're effective.
I guess so. Yeah, as much as we say we don't like them,
exactly.
They work.
They are effective, and that's the bottom line. And if you're trying to win the race, you do what you can to get in office, and then maybe do the things that the people want. But you have to get in office to have that opportunity. And it's crazy. Quinn, you've been around the game a lot longer than me, paying close attention to all this, or Dalton. What is it about negative ads that's so appealing and work?
They linger because people don't want to vote for somebody that makes them feel nervous, that they don't trust, et cetera, which is one reason why for decades I've been out there when I see, you know, I don't care who it's for or against, when I see something that's either not true or out of context, I've spoken up. I did it back on the editorial board at the Mobile Register during the race between Bob Riley and Don Siegelman. And Siegelman had something that was completely out of line against Riley, and so we wrote an editorial pointing that out, which, by the way, the Riley people then used in a commercial. But then 1 week later, Riley had something that was in a smaller way, but still unfair to Siegelman. We immediately jumped on, and I was the one that wrote it, that pointed out that Riley was being unfair. So it doesn't matter who I'm for, who I'm against. It's trying to call balls and strikes about what's accurate and what is in context. And, you know, and I could give other examples. So this isn't, say, vote for Glover. It isn't saying vote for against Harwell. You know, I think highly of what I know of both men. I'm just saying this ad is out of context and it's not fair.
While we're on the subject, let's keep talking about these primaries a little bit. And we have some big races, you know, everywhere has big races. We're in the midterms, but we have some tight races right now. I mean, whether you're looking at AL1, right? Yeah, AL1 with Carl and Marcus running against each other.
Yeah, tightened up.
Look at the Senate race, which is incredibly tight. A three-man race right now with Barry Moore and Steve Marshall and Jared Hudson making a lot of noise as someone who hasn't been in office like the other two. And even the Attorney General race, I mean, that one's gotten down and dirty too between Jay Mitchell and Katherine Robertson. They've raised a ton of money to be the next Attorney General of Alabama. What of any of these races or any that I didn't mention there, Quinn, what do you have your eye on or which race is kind of interesting to you?
Well, I had thought just from a distance, because I don't know either very well. In fact, I don't really know him, period, other than by reputation and what I've seen, that race for Attorney General, I've always thought highly of both Robertson and of Mitchell, and I don't like to see them go negative if they go negative against each other. But it deserves to be a spirited race because they both have a lot to offer. But again, the idea that there's a huge difference in approach to the law is absurd. I mean, they're both conservative Republicans who see things very similarly, and frankly, I think Alabama does well with either one, but they don't need to tear each other apart.
Yeah, but what's interesting to me is how much money both have raised and how close they are in that. I mean, you say they're not much different, but they each have their backers. From an article from, let's see, I guess this was 10 days ago. As of then, Mitchell's fundraising at $3.58 million and Robertson's at $3.49 million. That is a lot of money for the AG's race.
That is a lot of money, and conservatives should or might want to look at that and say, look, we're spending $7.2 million when we're going to get, you know, with minor differences, but we're going to get a solid conservative either way, and that money could better be spent, you know, somewhere else, saving a conservative against a liberal. But, you know, people are going to put their money, you know, money where they want, and one of the reasons that they're both raising so much money is they both have a lot to offer, and so they have built up legitimate levels of support. But it's just sort of sometimes frustrating to watch.
I know this is one subject that you emailed us about that you're very passionate about because you actually authored an article about it, and it's such a good article it's behind a paywall. And so I tried to get to it to read your thoughts on
Casey Means, nominee for U.S. Surgeon General, who still has not been confirmed. I don't know how many seats in the Trump administration still haven't been filled, but it seems more than usual, and this is one of them.
Well, okay, so this lady is a medical influencer, sort of very new agey, and she was chosen, most people think, by RFK Jr. because she is a skeptic of vaccines and she, you know, is against pesticides and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, share some of his views, right?
Yeah, which is well and good, but it's the rest of the package that has everybody up in arms, and it's why she's stalled in committee.
Tell us about her.
Yeah, so she was very smart, went to Stanford Med School, technically got her medical degree, but that has not really practiced as a physician. She's not licensed as a physician. Okay. She did not finish her residency, is what I understand. And so as the Trump's first term Surgeon General, very MAGA guy, Jerome Adams, very well respected, but very MAGA, has been on the warpath against her, saying she is not qualified. She is, if she were in the Surgeon General's corps, she would have to be there as a health care aide or assistant, not as a doctor, because she wouldn't qualify as a doctor under whatever the rules or regulations mm-hmm. are or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but then you go and look, and she's got a lot of conservative Christians very upset because she talks about making shrines to her dead relatives and praying to her dead relatives and trying to embrace the universal feminine and walking around talking to the trees, asking the trees to help her find a mate, and a lot of, you know, sort of stuff that is sort of out there, in fact, way out there, and I quote it again and again and again. And then she says, well, you know, we've got a rise in gastrointestinal cancer, you know, which is like, a lot of colon cancer,
yeah.
stuff like that. And she says, it's because we haven't followed the intuition of our gut and instead have been relying too much on the, quote, thinking rational brain and too much on evidence and solid stuff like that rather than our intuitive, rational gut.
Okay. Did she make this statement directly to a pine tree? Was this part of her conversation in the forest?
No, she has written this, and she's got a whole lot of followers. You know, she's one of these online influencers or whatever. And she's written this. Well, I'm sorry, the Surgeon General, I mean, you can have all kinds of spiritual beliefs. I'm fine with that. But the Surgeon General should not be saying, don't use a thinking, rational brain and don't use evidence, but instead go with the intuition of your gut in order to heal your gut.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what the lead doctor is supposed to be.
Yeah, some of that sounds kooky for sure. I will say, you know, kind of in her defense, and I don't know the ins and outs details. I haven't read everything that her and her husband have written about healthcare. But there have been some things over the years I've heard him say that makes sense to me. And, I mean, she's definitely a smart person, but I like her idea, kind of what I gathered from her back when I was paying attention to – she was on Joe Rogan and stuff like that – is she wants America to focus on prevention rather than spending money, all this money on the cure after people have already gotten sick, where you spend all this time. So that's one thing I liked about her. But
yeah, I would like that for sure.
I mean, you might be right there, though. There seem to be too many issues with her out there, and many Republicans don't seem to be going that way.
Well, look, the political arm of the Southern Baptist Convention has come out strongly against her. Every living former Surgeon General, including Trump's, including other Republicans, has come out against her. The problem is not with her. Look, if they want somebody that wants to talk about prevention and a lot of those things and using fewer pesticides to keep out of your food, that's fine. But you can find hundreds and hundreds of people, of actual medical doctors with licenses, who can push that without pushing some of this other stuff that is not just, you know, not, I'm not talking about going with the science. I'm talking about going deliberately against science and also talking to trees and stuff like that. That's not what we need in the Surgeon General, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to figure out how America has survived over a year without a Surgeon General. And do they have to take the Surgeon General warnings off of the cigarettes when you don't have a Surgeon General?
No, you can keep them on there.
Who's really telling you? Who's really warning you if you don't have one? We've got plenty more to talk about. We'll hit this break, Quinn. Listen to the news, and then let's talk Alabama power now that the legislative session is wrapped up and the power they have over Montgomery.
Yes, they seem to, for sure. It's 8:21. Dan and Dalton and Quinn Hillier, our guest on this Tuesday. More on the way.
Traffic tip or your own take on the news. Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. 8:25. It's Tuesday morning with Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com. NOLA, the advocate.
And legislative session adjourned, sine die, on Thursday. And that brought an end to the 2026 session. And immediately, everyone goes back home to campaign for their big races they have coming up.
Not but, before they complain about how yeah. terrible the session was before they left.
That's something Dan and I have a real issue with. Jeff does a great job interviewing all of these legislators. But, man, do they complain about their time up there. Like they didn't sign up for the job.
Like we roped them in a rodeo and dragged them into office.
Yeah, but, Quinn, the PSC bill, that Public Service Commission bill that came up kind of out of the blue, got a lot of public pushback. It was reworked into something the public seemed to be able to stomach, and then reworked again to look nothing like the House bill that the public was fine with. And Alabama Power, their name keeps coming up in regards to this bill.
Look, Glenn Yap has done a great job with this. Our legislature completely caved to Alabama Power, and almost every member of our local delegations caved to Alabama Power. The original sponsor of the bill even voted against it because what's needed is simple. What's needed is transparency and accountability. That's it. And the original bill would have required, oh my goodness, as if it's a really hard thing, regular, meaning annual, maybe even once every 3 years, but some sort of regular public rate hearings so the public could know what is going into these calculations. If they are a public monopoly governed by a publicly elected board, it would seem that you would have public rate hearings, right? No. Mm-hmm. The legislature stripped that out because they all ran cowering behind the big money Alabama Power lobbyists. And if you don't have transparency, you don't have accountability, it doesn't matter what else you do, you're just carrying water for the power company. And look, I have written Lord knows how many things defending power companies, defending, you know, energy companies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not against Alabama Power, but if you're not for transparency and you're not for accountability, then you got to get out of office. I'm sorry, because those are basics. That's not ideology. That's just basics.
And we
basic
saw
ethics.
Saw kind of how the sausage was made. It wasn't surprising, but certainly insightful, that leaked call between the Alabama Power lobbyist and the Energy Alabama guy.
Yeah.
And that lobbyist ended up losing his job. That kind of shows you how it works, right?
Right, yeah. So the call, and I don't have it in front of me, but was something like, well, why don't you do this so nobody will know that it's actually coming from us?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was subterfuge. Well, if you use subterfuge in order to defeat a bill that would require transparency, then that's double. That's what are you hiding? This is a public monopoly and a public service commission elected by the public. What is so hard about that?
Alabama politicians cowering to Alabama Power does not seem to be a brand new, fresh issue, Quinn.
No, it's not. But once, just once, I'd like to see somebody or more than a few somebodies with some actual guts, some actual independence, some actual accountability to the public.
All right, let's use this last minute and a half here with you, Quinn. Who are you pulling for that back nine on the Masters on Sunday? Bunch of guys close together. Didn't seem like anyone wanted to win. Were any of them the one you were rooting for?
Well,
Rory, Scotty?
Yeah, I was rooting for Justin Rose. He's such a class act. He's been so classy for so long. When he loses, he's always so gracious. Even when the fans haven't been with him because, you know, not that they're against him, but they, you know, he's English rather than American or whatever, he's taken it well. Now the fans were behind him.
They were.
Glad to see that.
They were.
And so that's good to see. But so I was sort of rooting for him. Look, I got nothing against Rory. My goodness, what a magnificent performer he has been. So
won it on Amen Corner. That doesn't, you know, that was a great little stretch there for him on Amen Corner. It was really cool to see.
Great tournament to watch because you had three or four people jockeying for the lead. McIlroy was down by three at one point. You know, he ended
up by six,
double bogeying the last hole and barely won. It was fascinating.
It was fascinating. But Quinn, thanks a bunch. We'll talk again next week.
Okay, thank you.
All that grumbling afterwards, including Scotty Scheffler, too. But
yeah.
Not pleased with the way the Masters did what they did.
The way they worked the course. I was personally pulling for Patrick Reed all the way through.
That's my guy. Yeah, right. He's Joseph's godfather. No. 8:30 with Dan and Dalton.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
.835 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings, as those Mobile boys from Muscadine Bloodline bring us in. Time to talk about a Mobile company, a company that gets it done. 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Trey Bennett and his crew do a fantastic job of making that junk disappear, whether you have them come out to your house, your business, maybe you have rental homes that need to be cleaned out. They'll do all that and more. And it's really an easy service to use. Not an easy service for them to work. I mean, they're picking up heavy stuff and moving it out all day and making homes look nice. But for your end, couldn't be easier. All you have to do to schedule your appointment is go online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Or if you still have one of those phones that you use, 1-800-GOT-JUNK is the number. Schedule that appointment and book the in-person estimate. They'll call or text you 15 to 30 minutes before they arrive, so you can do those final steps of getting ready to open that door and let them in. Then after you get a free estimate, there's no obligation. You could say no at any time, but that is the price you'll pay. They don't have any surprise charges they hit you with after they've already headed out the door. After that's the easy and fun part for you. Just point and watch your junk disappear. When you agree to the price, they'll get to work and remove your items right away. And they always treat your home with the greatest amount of respect. They realize they're coming into your home and they act like it. Plenty of 5-star Google reviews for 1-800-GOT-JUNK online. Let's see. One left last week from Chanel. These guys were perfect. They were informative, communicative, and professional. The process was thoroughly explained and handled in a very tidy and timely manner. I highly recommend hiring them for your removal project. 5-star review there.
And nice.
I would guess that you'd leave them a 5-star review as well after you use the services of 1-800-GOT-JUNK. So set that appointment up today. You can call the number 1-800-GOT-JUNK or get it done online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
On the text line, our boy CB Carl says, good morning, guys. Dalton, congratulations on your winning of the award. I was telling Laura about it and you leaving... you left the award where you were staying, right?
Yes, that's right. I left it in the hotel.
And he said the question we had was, you've got the award, but did you make it home with a souvenir robe or towels from the place where you were staying? Where were you staying, by the way?
Oh, we were staying at a nice... Now, I'd like to be Team Drury Inn now that we're building this. Oh,
yeah.
We're building this
Poundtown.
Behind us, yeah, out back there at Poundtown. But this was a Residence Inn, a year old in Mountain Brook. Celeste chose it well. It was beautiful. I love Mobile. I love our area more than the rest. But when you make it up to those mountains, you get through Birmingham, or I've always, over the years, during the fall especially, but spring is great too, driving up to Nashville and working your way through those hills and those trees are so beautiful. And yeah, it was beautiful up there in Birmingham. So beautiful that I left the award behind.
But the award has been secured.
Yes, yeah. They found it, and they're holding it. And thankfully, we have people we know in Birmingham who are going to grab it and take care of us. But
you know,
that's just how much it means to me, the award.
It should. It's great. When I lived in Athens, working and going to school, little this, little that, I would, in whatever jalopy that I owned at the time, because any of the cars that I owned in my late teens, early 20s, they were lucky to be on the road at all. It's because I paid so little for them. But I would ride up to the North Georgia mountains, and there's no telling how many Mountain County residents I nearly killed because my brakes going out. But I love going up there. It's just so serene and so beautiful.
Yeah.
And Athens isn't actually in the mountains yet. It's really kind of in the rolling hills, so you have to go north to get to them. But I'm with you. I love that scenery. I love that peace of mind it gives me. I always have.
Yeah, speaking of scenery, you brought it up with Dr. Bill, the cherry blossoms in D.C.
Yeah.
And I guess, I haven't been to D.C. I didn't realize the cherry blossoms were such a big deal. Somebody pointed out, though, that Macon, Georgia is known
Macon,
for them
Georgia.
As well.
Yeah.
Is that right? Did you bring that up, too?
I did, because I was in Macon, And I knew, I remember hearing about the Cherry Blossom Festival in D.C. In Macon, Georgia, they would have the Cherry Blossom Festival, maybe a month earlier than D.C. I don't know. But obviously, we're a lot warmer in Macon. Mm. And somehow there would be no mention that there was also a Cherry Blossom Festival in the nation's capital. No one would bring it up.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's another one that the world knows about.
Yeah.
But they kind of kept that, you know, mum. Yeah,
they didn't want you to know about
it. Yeah, they wanted to make sure that you were focused on the one in Macon.
That was Bucky Beaver letting us know about that one. And, yeah, bunch of texts. You know, we had a lot of texts about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees as well. Cheese Wagon breaking the news that Motley Crue has never made it into the hall. Iron Maiden finally did. They announced that last night.
How about the 21 consecutive years of being denied entry into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame by Iron Maiden?
Iron Maiden.
And like, what sort of Alabama power fee did they have to pay to finally break in?
Yeah, I mean, Phil Collins just got in, which is kind of crazy to me.
He's got all kinds of health issues, too.
Does he really?
I think he does.
Didn't realize that. Oasis, I mean, yeah, they're great. And that extended absence they had from culture, and then they started touring again. I think last year they kind of fired it back up. Billy Idol in this year, the Wu-Tang Clan, Luther Vandross, Sade, Joy Division, and New Order. They're putting them on the same line there. And Iron Maiden. So those are your Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees.
If you want to see Phil Collins, it doesn't look good. He's 74 now. He suffers from ongoing severe health issues stemming from a 2007 spinal injury.
Mm.
Terrible. Including nerve damage, mobility issues requiring a wheelchair, 24-hour nursing care. He's also faces type 2 diabetes, hearing loss, which I think maybe a lot of musicians end up with that problem.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Kidney issues as well. So Phil Collins not in good health, all stemming back from a 2007 spinal injury.
The thing about Phil Collins, I mean, obviously he's made some fantastic music. I mean, who can make the... And what's even the name of the, and I remember.
The night.
Yeah, I can see it coming in the air tonight. Who can make that and do the entire Lion King soundtrack? You know, that's like crazy.
Did he do the entire Lion King?
He may have. I know he played a big role in a lot of those Disney soundtracks.
The one about the I remember the night. What is it called? And
In the air tonight.
Wrote that. I just read this story recently. He and his wife and young family, I believe, lived in like a farmhouse. It cost him a lot of money.
Mm.
But it was the life that he wanted to live. And the whole thing was older and rustic. It needed to be repainted. Other than that, it was their dream home.
Mm.
He goes to America with Genesis, the band. And he says, we're going to make some money, and I'm going to secure the money so we can own this home outright. Again, only thing that's got left with the house is for it to be painted. His wife has an affair with the painter.
Oh, no.
He comes back to England, says, we've got the money we need now. And she says, yeah, well, I'm in love with Ricky over here.
Oh, boy.
So that was the essence of the In the Air Tonight.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't realize
that. Then he wrote that song. That's
I had it in my mind that for some reason that was
it seemed like it wouldn't be, you wouldn't have a painter involved in that romantic story.
I thought I read something about he was driving by somebody who was drowning or something like that.
That seemed to make more sense.
Yeah, but what always got me, you look back at the Phil Collins performances at festivals and things, and he looks like he created Microsoft. Like, he dressed like Bill Gates and those guys back then with the khakis. And then he'd get on and just drum and sing his heart out.
Yeah, he was a big deal. He was, I remember when they had the music festival in Birmingham, City Stages, Sound Stages, something like that up there before we had Bayfest down here. I remember Phil Collins coming to Birmingham. That was a huge deal.
Mm. Some more text. We were talking about Fairhope, and last night their city council looking at upping the penalties for people that are using the rental. I guess they're not always rentals either, but the e-bikes and the e-scooters, and a lot of folks in downtown Fairhope are over that. And that was the discussion last night. Where was it? I had someone who was texting in. Okay.
Yeah.
Summerdale Tony said, I work in Fairhope most every day, and I've noticed these kids on the bicycles. What is really amazing is you never saw kids outside until they came out with the electric bikes. So maybe there's something to that. I don't know.
It's drawn them out of the house. Also, Backstrap Stacker says on Saturday there was a jackass riding a rental scooter in traffic on Government. He's lucky to be alive today. Mm. So, you know, when you have these little scooters that are downtown Mobile, you think more of being maybe Dolphin at the being the busiest street you would be on and the side streets around it. Government, there's a lot of lanes going this way and that way. Yeah. I don't know that you want to be on a scooter out there.
Heck, I saw one a few weeks back as I was pulling out of the station going westbound on Airport in the slow lane and absolutely flying.
Wow.
On that scooter. Yeah, like, and not the scooter that you sit down on, but the one you actually are standing up. He had to have been going 30 miles an hour.
Really?
He was absolutely hauling on Airport. I wouldn't be able to do that. Also, the new canine in Spanish Fort, Ray,
I think
is the name, who can detect high cortisol levels. That's the stress,
it's released.
Hormone that's put out there when you're stressed out. So really a dog that's supposed to settle things down for people who are involved in a crime or witnesses to a crime or even the officers who have to do that. And
therapy dogs, basically.
But I was wondering, you know, what's that like if you're in a big room and the stress dog comes to you?
Mm-hmm.
Michael said, that sounds a little bit stressful in itself, being in a room full of people and the dog always comes to sit by you.
Well, the dog is there to help. If you're embarrassed by your stress level, then that's kind of still on you. But the dog is there to provide you with comfort.
I don't know how long that's been the big thing, you know, in the health stuff that I've seen over the years. They're all now about lowering cortisol levels. Hmm. And, you know, stress is the real killer.
Yep.
So if you can find a way to lower that in the long run, you'll be better off.
Well, I'll tell you, there's something to it for sure. There's definitely, if you can work your body and mind from the inside out, if you get things all tucked away properly, where you're not stressed out, and then whatever actions you kind of tend to go toward when you're stressed out, but if you can calm everything down to start with, then I think that's where the dog comes in.
Yeah, I think if I had that dog in my house while my kids were doing their thing, he would be on my lap. Because they stress me out.
Yeah.
They stress me out. Rick texted in. He said, what the hell? Three Dog Night is not going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And what about Donny Osmond? Yeah, neither of them have made it in. Rick also said, Trump needs to stop playing footsies with the Iranian thugs. To quote most of the players in the Middle East, finish the job. If we don't complete what needs to be done, we'll be back at it in 5 years. Same thugs, but different faces. And said, if you want a Masters t-shirt made in America, I have one from 1976 that I'll let you have for $1. The shipping and handling is only $29.95. What's
That's
your address?
Funny. Yeah. That is funny. The, what was the first thing that Rick brought up there? Was
The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Three Dog Night. They had a heck of a run. And now some of these runs are shorter than others, but when you look at them historically, like for maybe a 5 or 6 year stretch, Three Dog Night and bands like that you've now completely forgotten, but like from 1968 to 1974 or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was their exact kind of run right there.
And they were not just a band, an average band, had a few hits. They were just major players in arenas all around the world.
Yeah, and I looked it up because I was having trouble believing that they weren't in. And they said one of the reasons may be because they weren't writing their own music, which I don't know if he was writing it for Three Dog Night or not.
That wouldn't have anything to do with it. No, Hoyt Axton wrote the Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog, and that was originally a country song.
Yeah.
My Three Dog Night memory is we would have these shows of old rock and roll bands, but only like a third of them.
Yeah.
And they would come together like in Columbus, Georgia at the convention center. And so you'd have basically Two Dog Night, and you'd have this and that. You'd have members handpicked from each band that were gonna come.
It's like a super band, but really it's who's left.
And they were only together near the end of the session. Mostly they played, but they would come out and play their hits.
Okay, yeah.
So, and I remember seeing Chuck Negron, one of the Three Dog Night had three lead singers, so they had a lot of talent. Anyway, he was on Good Morning America maybe a half a year before they came to Columbus. And he was talking about how he's all clean and it's changed his life and he's exercising regularly. Mm-hmm. And you cannot believe what this has done for the way he views himself and the people around him. And it's all a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
So this is on Good Morning America in May, say, of some year, right?
Okay.
85, 86. In October of 86, he's handing me a joint. And I'm saying, no thanks, Chuck.
Yeah.
No thanks, man.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah.
And looks like you're back.
Yeah, it's one thing to say it on Good Morning America. It's one thing to keep it up 5 months later off the road.
Yeah,
right?
on a freight elevator.
That's too much. Many of you pointing out, yeah, so Collins did the Tarzan soundtrack. And Lion King was Elton. Okay,
Elton John. Yeah,
got my Disney movies mixed up there. I will tell you that when I was in fourth grade for the talent show, I sang a song from the Hercules soundtrack. So
really,
a little tidbit of information there.
Dude, solo?
It was all by myself.
Wow,
all by myself, and I did not come anywhere close to winning.
I never have performed like that in front of an audience of singing. A little karaoke every now and then at a birthday party or at a bar, but. That's about it.
Yeah. Yeah, these days I'm not too keen to get up there and warming up the vocal cords.
I think you've got a good voice, man. I think you have a good singing voice.
All right, well, I'll be performing Friday night at, where should I go?
Hey, we'll figure it out. Popeye's on Government. 8:51 with Dan and Dalton.